Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Kevin, it's Blag the Ripper, representing the Dwarves. 25 years of the heavy metal shop. You are a rock legend, my friend, and the only reason that I'm going to Salt Lake City.
I'm JP, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and we're one of the oldest independent publications in the U.S., distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On today's episode, we're going to be checking in with the Heavy Metal Shop. We're going to be finding out about the Of Meat and Marrow dance performance at SB Dance and the Urban Arts Festival at the SLC Arts Hub. The Heavy Metal Shop is one of SLC's oldest record stores, specializing in music, apparel, posters, and other merch from hard rock and metal bands. It was founded in 1987 in the suburb of Sandy by Kevin Kirk. The metal moved to Sugar House 2 years later, where it stayed for 17 years. They moved between two locations in Sugar House, and then they moved downtown to the Redmond in August of 99 and moved to their current location in May of 2001. And this year, the shop is celebrating 25 years of bringing brutality to Utah. Here's Napalm Flesh's Briar Wharton speaking with Kevin.
How important do you think record music shops are in what people are calling the modern age? And why do you think the heavy metal shop is important now compared to 25 years ago?
It's changed a lot, you know, obviously with the internet. So that, you know, as far as selling music, that's changed a lot. But I think the interaction, the personal interaction with people, you know, to talk about music in, you know, face to face in the store, I think people really enjoy that. I know I do.
How's the flow of people coming through changed in what people are into?
Well, that much hasn't changed that much, you know, as far as the music, you know, like the class, you know, Maiden, Priest, and Motorhead, you know, all that stuff is still, you know, a lot of young people are getting into that. As far as people, it's a lot of the children of my older customers have come in. I get a lot of, you know, they tell me, oh, my dad used to come here, and lots of stories, you know, from when their parents brought them in when they were kids, too, when they were little kids. I get a lot of tourists, too. But, you know, there's not many record stores left, so, you know, to still be around and, you know, people from all over come in. So.
I would hope that my 13-year-old daughter would want to go in there these days, but she's not in that realm, unfortunately. But she goes in there for me. I remember a few years ago for Christmas, her grandma brought her in there to get me a record, Motorhead record.
Good choice on the Motorhead.
I think you probably steered her in that direction.
Well, I think, like with my kids, they kind of had to rebel against what I did. More of their friends thought what I was doing was cooler than they do. You know, as they, you know, when they got a little, you know, teenagers and they were rebelling, I think they appreciate it a lot more now. But there's a time where your kids just want to do, they don't want to do what you do. That's not cool, you know. And 13's about the age. And, you know, like with my kids, that's when they, their pants, you know, started hanging off and they're listening to hip hop. And, you know, they didn't care that, you know, that I took them to see the Ramones and Motorhead and Alice. And, you know, they just had to rebel. So that's just something kids do.
On the flip side, I've been to, probably with your help, been to Slayer and Alice Cooper with my dad throughout the years.
I remember seeing you guys. That's awesome.
How ingrained in the culture of Salt Lake City and Utah in general do you think the heavy metal shop has become after 25
Well, years? You know, I hear a lot of stuff from people. You know, it's real flattering to me that it's that important to people. It is that important to me too, though. I've done this half my life. And that's just really cool that it worked out that way, you know, that people feel it's that important. You know, I hear lots of cool stories from people. Guy telling me that he met his wife in line for something at my shop. That was kind of cool. I had a couple ask me to do their marriage for him, be like the pastor or whatever, and I don't know what happened to them. I think maybe they didn't get married.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this. This is from memory. Your dad was a butcher, and from what I remember, you started out part of your working career in that realm as a butcher. What made you decide to start your own business? You had the CD shop now in Sandy. What was the final nail in the coffin that made you to commit to starting the heavy metal?
Well, it starts even before I was a butcher. Because I did that with, you know, but when I was a kid, you know, I would work with my dad. I'd go with him, do, you know, I think the laws were different back then, because I was just a kid and I would be working in a meat shop with them. This is when we lived in Idaho. But I was always into music, you know, so the reason I'd work, the money was to buy records. And that was, you know, clear back sixth grade, I was working with my dad to buy records. And then as I, you know, like got into junior high, my growing my hair long and playing guitar and doing that, had a paper route, still working with my dad. And then, when I was in high school, right after high school, I was washing dishes at a restaurant, worked at a gas station. I had a couple of different jobs. You know, I just was always working. And my dad said, you know, he goes, what are you gonna do, wash dishes the rest of your life? And because I can get you a good job, you know, full-time cutting meat, you'll be a, you know, meat cutter. And I had to cut my hair off. So that was always a battle though, because I had to wanted my hair long. I was playing in a band, you know, plus I like my hair long. Just goes with rock and roll to me anyway. That's just how I feel about it. So, you know, anyway, so I did that and saved my money. And I wanted to open a record store, just being a big music fan that I am. So I was a meat department manager, saved my money, quit that, and opened my store, and didn't cut meat for 20 years. And then just a couple of years ago, I went back in the mornings for a little extra dough. Never thought I'd do that again, but I'm glad I know how to do something other than just rock.
And part of the question was, you initially had the general music shop out in San
Diego. Oh yeah, that was...
What made it?
Well, you know, I did that, but I was always liked the heavier stuff. And I hated selling stuff I didn't know about, too. I mean, and people want, you know, this CDs were so new, everybody wanted everything that was coming out on CD. So I was bringing all this jazz in and classical music and stuff I didn't have an interest in. And it, people would be coming in wanting that kind of stuff, and I'd be, you know, playing Slayer or whatever, and I knew I had to just kind of specialize. That's what I figured, that's what I would be my best thing to do at that time, and it worked out. A lot of people didn't think, you know, because I did pretty well just being CD shop, but it was because CDs were so new, you know, that's everybody, they were buying everything on CD, which is just the opposite now.
Now your racks are more vinyl than CDs.
Yeah, even cassettes, people want cassettes too.
So what started your love for heavy metal?
Well, let's see, this goes back when I was just a kid. I mean, it's silly, but I remember the Monkees on TV. That's not really metal, but it's rock, you know. I loved that. I loved the Partridge Family, those Archie comics. I collected those when I was a young kid. So it was just all rock and roll. And then I was fascinated. I watched these in concert, Don Kirshner's rock concert. They were on late at night. You know, this was way before MTV. This would be, you know, 70s, early 70s, 73, 4. And saw Alice Cooper. And that was, you know, that was so cool. I'd never seen anything like that. And I remember he was singing Sick Things, and he's singing, you know, it's a creepy, cruel song, and he's singing it, and watching with my little sister. And his snake came around his face, and, you know, you didn't see it initially, but then there's the snake, and she screamed. And this is on TV. That was pretty cool, you know, so I don't know if that's, you know, just part of it. And I remember seeing Black Oak, Arkansas on one of those shows, and they were awesome. New York Dolls, you know, and then I you know, started going to concerts too around that time. I was 13, 1975, we lived in Twin Falls, Idaho, and my parents actually drove me and my friends to Boise. I saw Johnny Winter with Ted Nugent warming up for him, and that was 1975. And then the next one, my sister and her boyfriend drove me and some friends up, and we saw Black Oak, Arkansas. And that was, you know, that got me. And then we moved to Salt Lake, and that was big arena shows, Aerosmith, Blister Cult, UFO, and Lizzy, just great stuff.
The Half Skull logo is known infamously, not just in Utah, but it's got its own reputation. Is there anything about the logo that you haven't really said before?
Well, I've said it before and things. You know, the guy that designed the logo wasn't a metalhead, which I think, you know, I had another friend that had designed a logo for me, and it was more of a metal thing. It had a guitar going up through a skull. The letters, you couldn't read them that well, like a lot of metal bands. And I did a few shirts with that. In fact, it was Brad Barker that did that for me. He's an artist. He's a great artist. I love what he does. But that was something he did back then. He was, you know, younger too. I did some shirts with that. But this other guy that did the logo, he was one of my customers from CD shop, and he was more into jazz and that kind of stuff. And he was a graphic designer, and he asked me, he said, if you ever need a logo, you know, I'll do it for you. Really cool dude. So when I changed the name, I said, I need a logo. And he, at first he came up, it was a half record with the same lettering, with a half record written out the long way. And I said, well, that looks like Randy's records, you know, which I love Randy's records, but it wasn't metal. I said, you need a skull or blood or something. Oh, you sure you want to do that? Because he was, you know, pretty conservative guy. And he, anyway, he came back with the half skull. And it was just awesome.
Now, on that same subject of logos, I don't know how many years ago it was, but you started a new, I would say, I'd call it a mascot. Designed by Wes Fried. How different was the process working with Wes and getting a logo and character you liked after?
Well, you know, it was such an easy thing with Wes. He loved what I was doing, you know, and he loved the Peddling Evil, you know. He loved what I was doing, and Muddy was already a character that existed. He was his mascot for his old punk band, Mud Helmet, Richmond, Virginia. And he hadn't used Muddy since those days, you know, 20 years before. So when he designed that for me, he brought him out of retirement, you know, and he even put that on his website. You know, Muddy's got a job. He's working in Salt Lake City at the heavy metal shop. And anyway, the first week when I got those, I emailed Wes. I said, you outsold Eddie this week, you know, Iron Maiden's Eddie. And he said, he laughed. He said, that's funny that the Drive-By Truckers, you know, were good friends with him. They said they called him the Hillbilly Eddie, Muddy. This was back, you know, years ago when Muddy was there, you know, Mud Helmet mascot. So yeah, that was a whole different thing, you know, and he just came up with that. You know, that's a whole nother thing too. You know, I think that's great too. The Wes Fried artwork's awesome too. Works great with the heavy metal shop. You know, now we throw an old school metal shop shirt on Muddy, you know, put him on a shirt, wear one of our old shirts. So anyway, it worked out really good.
You've always had in stores, and I remember a lot of them. I think the standout is probably Gwar.
Yeah, those were good ones.
What events? You have the 25th anniversary party coming up. What events? Who do you have playing? Do you have going on?
Well, that party, we got Michael Dean Dameron. He's one of my, he's a great artist, one of my good friends. He's played the shop a lot, probably more than anybody. He's a great guy. And we've got James Kotak from the Scorpions. He's the drummer. And he's also a friend of Mike's. And Stephanie from the band Cleveland, she's gonna be there. And her and James are gonna do an acoustic thing with Mike. And then this local kid, Jake Johnson's gonna play an acoustic thing and gonna have a good time. It's gonna be a good party.
With those in stores, is there anything that stands out for you as one of your favorite, or the opportunities of being the proprietor of the heavy metal shop?
Yeah,
anything,
that's been...
Any opportunities that stand out among the...
Well, some of the biggest and greatest ones were Slayer, you know, and I can't thank Slayer enough for what they've done for, you know, for my business over the years, Tom especially. They flew in a day early to do it in store in 95, you know, and he told me, he said, I wouldn't do this for anybody else. And that was really, you know, really awesome. So that sticks out, you know, a couple thousand people lined up down the street, you know, just cool. And then some of these other ones, we've been to these live ones. I love those, the live performances, you know, having Justin Townsend role play in my shop, and, you know, Wayne Hancock, you know, Super Suckers, and all the Throw Rack. That was just,
I remember, yeah. You telling me that Tom from Slayer, was it him that was dating a girl that lived here, and he'd randomly come in the shop?
Yeah, yeah. He would be in town when Slayer wasn't on tour, and I remember a Saturday, he was in the shop, and, you know, this is back then when it was just, you know, busy all, you know, Saturdays were really busy. It was like two or three, me and Jimmy would be working, or me and Gene and Shell. But anyway, Tom came in with his girlfriend, and there was kids in there, we were talking and stuff, and Tom bought some stuff. I remember he bought some Voivod CDs, and a Suicidal shirt for his girlfriend. And then I gave him a shirt. I said, yeah, they were working on Seasons. And I said, yeah, wear this on your new album cover. I was just joking, but he goes, oh, you'll see it. You know, and they leave, and these kids come up, was that Tom Araya? Yeah, I said, we heard you call him Tom. We didn't think it was really Tom Araya. So that was kind of a funny story. And then, you know, jump to when Seasons comes out, and I got an order in the Kerrang order, Kerrang magazine, and hadn't seen anything yet with Tom wearing the shirt, but you know, I pulled those magazines out, and he's right on the cover. You know, the whole band Slayer's on the cover, and he's wearing the shirt. So that's one of those moments. That was awesome. Still looking at seeing those pictures, it's still so cool to me.
So yeah, you never know, you walk in, you might run into somebody. I remember years ago I was in there and the entire band of Dying Fetus walked in.
I was out of town, I think Parker was working for me.
This is Michael Dameron. Hey buddy, I love you man, you're one of my best friends. so many great stories, I don't even know where to start. But you have been a big inspiration to me. And what you do is important in this world, in a world full of fakes and bullshit. What you do there at that shop is important, man. And just keep fighting a good fight as long as you can. As long as you're hanging in there, I'm hanging in there. Anyway, man, I'll see you there with James and Steph and Micah. It's going to be a great show. It's going to be a great day. I love you, brother.
I'm calling in to share my fondest memory of the heavy metal shop with everyone. And that memory has to be when Flight Menstrua and Techno Destructo of Guar did a signing and meet and greet at the old heavy metal shop in Sugar House. I had to have been about 13 or 14 and I waited in line for what seemed like hours. And once I got in, I didn't have anything for them to sign, and so I snagged a flyer for the event. And first, Flight Menstrua signed the back of it, and then I got over to Techno Destructo, who was my favorite member of the band at the time, and he signed it, and I got a Polaroid taken with him. Almost 15 years later, I still have that flyer with their signatures and the Polaroid, and probably a few of my most cherished possessions. I'm glad that Kevin's kept that shop open through hard economic times and multiple locations, and congratulations on the anniversary. Keep it going, Kevin.
This is Lauren Weiberg from Flesh Peddler. My memories of the heavy metal shop in Sugar House, standing in line waiting to meet Slayer, and just feeling like I was in the metal heaven when I was there. Thanks.
So I was probably about just 6 or 7 when the heavy metal shop opened, but you know, it's something that I really remember because, you know, growing up in Utah County, it was an issue that was kind of controversial for the time, so a lot of people in, you know, around me were talking about it a lot. So I really remember having this idea about the heavy metal shop as like something totally outside the norm as I was growing up. And I actually didn't even go into the shop until I was 17. It really kind of had a heavy influence on who I was kind of growing up into as a person, because being outside the norm was something that I wanted to be. You know, even though those first 10 years I never got to go into the shop, like, just that idea of the heavy metal shop really kind of influenced me in that way.
The Heavy Metal Shop is located at 63 Exchange Place in downtown Salt Lake City. And to snag some merch with their famous logo, visit them at heavymetalshop.com. The Puddle Mountain Ramblers make ramblin' bluegrass music here in Salt Lake City, and during their run have progressed from small bars to some of Utah's bigger outdoor concerts and festivals. The five-piece group includes Nick O'Baron, Nick Boyer, Matt Ligman, Matt Stauffer, and Bo Uriona. The Ramblers released their debut album, Grandma's Shotgun Stance, in May of 2010. From that album, here's Little Bird Told Me. That was Puddle Mountain Ramblers with Little Bird Told Me from their album Grandma's Shotgun Stance. They'll be performing this Friday, June 8th at the Urban Lounge for Slug Localized with Ugly Valley Boys and Staxo Lee. It's just $5 and it starts at 10. To learn more about the band, check out the June 2012 issue of Slug Anyplace Cool or on slugmag.com. And for additional info on upcoming tour dates and merch, visit them online at puddlemountain.com. P-U-D-D-L-E, mountain.com. This week, SB Dance is unveiling their latest performance of Meat and Marrow. It's a mixed-medium ballet about life and death, performed by a select group of SLC's top dancers, including Liberty Valentine, Juan Carlos Claudio, Nathan Shaw, Jenny Larson, Christine Hasegawa, Ursula Perry, and Tony Lugo, and guest musicians Brenda Sue Cowley and Lindsay Heath. Slug senior staff writer Mariah Mellis sat down with Valentine to talk about the show.
Tell me a little bit about SB Dance. For somebody who doesn't do dance or modern dance, tell me what you can see and expect.
SB Dance has been around Salt Lake City for, I started with him 12 years ago, and I think he probably has been here for about 15 years, and he's been doing amazing work in Salt Lake City that I don't think a lot of people have seen.
Nice. And SB is Stephen Brown.
Stephen Brown. That's exactly right. And so he's been creating over at the Rose Wagner for a few years, and I think that he's really is getting out of the modern dance box and trying to bring in an audience that is larger and part of the community. And so he's stepping up with a bunch of events that are happening throughout the year. We'll be doing some performances May 30th at the UMOCA, and then throughout in August and December. And he's got a whole new team of people that are really backing him up, like Winnie Wood, who is the new associate director, and a bunch of friends on the board and people that are really interested in what he's creating.
Excellent. And you guys have a bunch of new dancers too, right?
It's a whole new team. There's some old ones. There's me, Christine, and Nathan, Juan Carlos. There's a bunch from RDT and Roy Woodbury, a bunch of theater people. So it's a great group of people right now.
Nice. And speaking of theatrics, you were saying that this next show that you have coming up is kind of a little theatrical. Tell me a little bit about
Of Meat and Marrow. So it deals with a lot of still props and a lot of flesh.
This sounds totally... I want to probe more. Yes, tell me more about these props. What is the use of props in dance?
The use in props with dance with Stephen Brown, I believe, is to do a lot of problem solving. Figuring it out with a bunch of people. You know, it's one thing to be a painter who's painting by themselves and figuring out, you know, how they're going to create their product, but you get 10 people into the studio, it becomes more of a problem, so you have to figure it out. You know?
Well, and this isn't kind of improvisation or impromptu, it's going to be, I mean,
not
this is, you guys really figure it out, but you do it with the work of Stephen overseeing it, and you using these props to kind of show people problem solving and working together.
For sure, and that's the beauty of his work, is it's not just like a beautiful thing that you're seeing, like fluid movement on stage. You know, the idea of modern dance just being this ambiguous fluid motion, it has to deal with, you know, we're actually involved with each other and what we're doing and trying to create a different atmosphere than when we entered it.
Well, and I don't know if it was Stephen's intent or not, but when you first told me about this, I felt like it kind of left a very good social commentary to, you know, that whether we think we need to or not, people have to work together for a common goal and good, and maybe that gets lost a little bit in today's society. We're all on our phones with our heads down, you know, not thinking about how it affects everybody else. So I love that you guys all work together, and it's not just, here's your role, you play this part. You know, get on the stage and then get off. So I love that you're all working together on this.
For sure, and I think that really comes out with the idea of the meat and the marrow. You know, like, what does that mean? What are the meat? What is the bone part of it? Like, what are we producing here, you know?
Yeah, what's the skeleton or the infrastructure and the people and the blood and the, you know, the heartbeat within that structure? So
exactly.
You guys are kind of the heartbeat. I was joking earlier. I was like, I want to see some meat. I hope there's some meaty dancers. So we're not going to see any stick figures, or are we?
Oh, you'll see all sorts of flesh and bodies in there.
Nice.
For sure.
I said I like my dancers perky and plump,
yeah.
So excellent. So when's the show taking place, and where is it taking place?
So the show, it opens on June 8th, and it runs the 8th and 9th, and the following weekend, which is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, in the Black Box.
And again, I said this was a great introduction for somebody who's not really in, you know, has never really experienced a lot of dance before. And tickets are really reasonably priced. They're like $15?
$15.
Yep. $15.
At the door, and... yeah, I think you will be surprised by what you see. It's not, your idea of modern dance might just be
nice,
be
rocked a little bit, excellent. Throughout the year, if I can't make it on any of these days, where do I find out more information? And what else are you guys? You said a lot more events and kind of building this infrastructure for people to feel engaged in dance. It's not just a performance in the spring and a performance in the fall. There are things that you can go and see and do and be involved with the rest of the year. So what can we look forward to?
So we are going to do a show on the 30th at UMOCA. Hopefully, maybe something at Pride Festival. If not, I'll be rocking it over there. But there's also something in August called the Cultural Confidential, which deals with, you know, really finding out what this is, what culture is, and what we're doing here as artists. And then there's a fundraiser in December, which is, you know, wine, food, fun.
I love that it's called a fundrager. It's like, no, that wasn't a misspeak or whatever you want to call it. It's a fundrager.
Rage is funny.
Nice. And that is food. Wait, food, wine, theater, and wine. It's WTF.
Wine, theater, and food.
Wine, theater, and food. So I love it.
And then the last thing would be in January, which is the very beast of SB Dance, and it brings back a lot of just old issues and themes.
Of Meat and Marrow takes place June 8th through the 9th at 8 p.m., and June 15th through the 16th at 8 p.m., and June 7th at 4 p.m. For more information on the show, you can check out our article in the June 2012 issue of Slug. For tickets, visit arttix.org or call 801-355-ARTS. For more information on the show and SB Dance, visit them at sbdance.com. Does dulcet tones mean that Ricky Vigil has joined us once more, contributing editor of Slug Magazine? Thank you for joining us, Ricky.
I am happy to be here, JP.
I love your take on the theme song, as usual.
Yeah.
Last week, everyone loved it.
Yeah, I assume so. I mean, theater of the mind.
I want to start off, if I may, this awesome week with Desert Rocks.
Please start.
It's at Green River, Utah, in Green River, Utah, featuring a whole bunch of great local bands and national bands. You got guys like Charlie Tuna joining the fest. It's at a privately held ranch this year, so we've cut out the riffraff. People can do whatever the hell they want. Burn some babies, light some fires. Actually, I shouldn't say that.
Maybe you don't do that. You'll get them banned from Green River.
Yeah, anyways, you can have a great time.
Yeah, and I think they have watermelons down in Green River, so you can chomp on some melons while you enjoy Beats Antique.
Just take your machete down there and carry it around the fest. I'm sure people won't mind.
Yeah,
chop up your watermelons.
They probably encourage it.
And June 10th is when it ends, and there's a huge blowout that day of a bunch of awesome musicians, so check it out.
It seems like a cool fest.
And on that same day, I know one of your favorite bands is going to be in town.
Thrice.
Yeah, Ricky.
My name is not Estera Moronio, JP.
I'm sorry, I confused you. I'm sorry.
I do enjoy Thrice, and it actually is Thrice's farewell tour. This is probably the second or third farewell tour Thrice has embarked upon. Anyway, maybe you should go, just in case they decide not to get back together. They're playing with Animals as Leaders and Oh Brother in the venue. I'm going to go to the show, even though I kind of made fun of Thrice and Estera. I'm sorry, both Thrice and Estera. Because I'll be there. I'll see you guys. I'll give you all high fives, and it'll be a good time.
You look really contrite, by the way. This is a legitimate apology, Thrice.
Yeah.
Thrice is listening, as they do.
Yeah, and I'm trying to be cool, but I am sincere. I try not to let too much emotion get out there, but Thrice, this one's for you. I don't know what this one is.
Are we playing a song? Cue the Thrice.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have rights to play that. Do you know any other songs you can maybe sing them like you did our intro?
Oh, man.
No, I know. So here's one of their breakdowns.
They don't really have breakdowns.
God damn it. We haven't heard Thrice in years. They used to have breakdowns. These people are good bands. Go enjoy Thrice and their non-breakdown, hardcore breakdowns.
Yeah.
And the following day, Friday, June 8th and 9th, Andre Williams and the Gold Stars will be at the Garage, which is going to be a pretty amazing show, of course.
Have you ever seen Andre Williams?
No, I've heard talk.
Yeah, I mean, he plays here pretty often. He plays in Salt Lake. Last time he was here, he also played two nights. I've never seen him either, but I really want to. He's a 70-something-year-old man who kind of lived a hard life, playing soul music all his life. It's kind of cool that he's still around, still touring. I definitely want to check one of these shows out.
Yeah, people love him. That's why he's able to play two dates on that in this city. And Saturday, June 9th, it's going to be the Urban Arts Fest at the SLC Art Hub, 663 West, 100 South. You know about this fest, don't you, Ricky?
Yeah, it happened last year, actually. It happened right in front of the Slug HQ last year on Pierpont Avenue. They have all kinds of vendors. They have graffiti artists. They have all kinds of different artists. I believe they had some b-boys and some rappers last year. I'm not quite sure what they have planned this year, but I do know that people are excited. It should be cool.
Yeah, we're going to have a Slug booth, and people are welcome to come say hi, hit us up for some stuff. Also, by the way, spoiler alert, we're about to talk about that here after this Ugly Valley Boys song. We're going to find out everything you wanted to know with Derek Dyer, so we'll go more into the Urban Arts Fest in just a few moments. And Sunday, June 10th, there's a very special event. Will you help us out with that, Ricky?
Sure.
Do you want to do Death Growls?
I don't know. I feel like the Death Growls played out.
That was mainly on the Napalm Flesh
episode. Yeah, I feel like I should save that.
Yeah, why don't you just give us Sunday and Monday's birthdays, please?
Okay. So on Sunday, June 10th, we have Peyton Bischoff's birthday. Happy birthday, Peyton. Let me do an Astaire. Happy birthday, Peyton! That's all right, I guess. Whatever. Peyton is one of our designers. He designs ads, and he's designed some localized posters for us, so we're glad to have Peyton around. And then, on Monday, June 11th, we have two birthdays. Happy birthday, Eric Scott Russell, who's one of our photographers. Then we also have happy birthday, Manuel Aguilar. Aguilar.
Come on, Ricky.
Come on, Aguilera.
Do you lose your Mexican heritage card if you can't pronounce that?
I was never issued one. Also, I lost my social security card at the DMV once. I feel like I should just mention that. If anyone has seen it, please return it. Thank you.
Mine's missing too, so get us back our social security cards.
Yeah. Manuel did our beer issue cover in 2010.
He's a great illustrator, and he's done other stuff for us as well. And he's got something called The Barn, which is amazing. You'll have to talk to him about that.
Yeah.
As usual, you can check out more daily calendar info at the back of our magazine, and you can find it online at slugmag.com on the front page. There's a handy little graph there. And of course, we've got an app on the iPhone, which has our calendar. It also has all our past issues and current issues. You can listen to the podcast. You can call us on the podcast, leave a voice message, basically everything you'd ever want on the app.
Also, if you have any daily calendar dates, you should email them to dailycalendar@slugmag.com. We can get them in the issue, on the website, basically everywhere that the daily calendar exists. So do that.
Thank you for that addition, Ricky. Hey, we always forget. Welcome. We need your daily calendars because we make this up, but it helps if you give us information we can make it up around.
Yeah, I have some knowledge.
You got mad knowledge. Yeah.
Thanks.
Is that street talk? Mad is street talk.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Mad streets.
We're obviously very streets.
Yeah, I come from the mad streets, JP.
Hey, thanks again, Ricky.
No problem.
The Ugly Valley Boys make Americana roots music straight out of Utah with Ryan Eastland on guitar, vocals, and kick drum, and Braxton Brandenburg on upright bass. They released their debut full-length album, Double Down, in July of 2011 with guitarists Mike Sasich and Brad Wheeler recording. Here's Ugly Valley Boys with Raven from their album, Double Down.
Do my my skin when the hawking cold. That's when the sun shines in, a soft pulse arise. You've been a long, oh, you've been a long time. You know I had my share of heartache even before I was born. They tell me that there's something vast over from the black night beyond. A soft pulse arise. You've been a long, oh, you've been a long time. Well, they say when you fall alone. When you rise to find your way back home. Say when you fall, you fall alone. When you rise, find your way back home. Find your way back home tonight. Now that the smoke is clear, I'm the only one standing here. I was hard to recognize, a soft pulse arise, oh. You know, I thought I had a good thing, but that one turned out bad. I was looking over all the things that I thought I had. A soft pulse arise, been a long, oh, you've been a long time. Well, they say when you, oh, you fall alone. When you rise to find your way back home, I say when you fall, you fall alone. When you rise, find a way back home. Find a way back home.
From the Ugly Valley Boys album Double Down, that was Raven. The band is performing this Friday, June 8th at the Urban Lounge for Slug Localize with Staxo Lee and the aforementioned and heard Puddle Mountain Ramblers. It's just $5 and it starts at 10. To learn more about the band, check out the June 2012 issue of Slug Anyplace Cool or on slugmag.com. And for more info on upcoming tour dates and to purchase their album, visit them online at uglyvalleyboys.com. The SLC Arts Hub was founded in November of 2011 by the Utah Arts Alliance. It currently occupies the main offices for the UAA, which includes a multi-purpose art space, a children's playroom, and a 2,400 square foot dance floor. The two-story complex also serves as art space for several artists including Blake and Kat Palmer, Chris Madsen, Ben Altman, Terrence Hansen, and John Madsen. The Hub houses organizations such as the B-Boy Federation, People Productions, Salt Lake Capoeira, and Gray Wall Gallery. This year, the Alliance's annual Urban Arts Festival will take place at and around the Hub as the inaugural opening date for the complex. Slug writer Amanda Nuri chatted with Derek Dyer about the festival.
When did you get involved with the Utah Arts Alliance?
We founded the Utah Arts Alliance in 2003. At the time, it was kind of after the Olympics a little bit, and I was working with the city on trying to keep the spirit alive, you know, and keep this energy that we had during the Olympics, especially through the arts and things like that. At that time, there was just a lot of energy in the city, but there wasn't a lot of places to house that energy or to foster the artists that wanted to do things like that. So I decided that we needed to do something. No one else was doing it, so I was going to do it. And so we got a group together, including Angela Brown, the publisher of Slug Magazine. We just kind of brainstormed, what does the city really need? And then we took it a little further and said, what does the state need? You know, Salt Lake City doesn't have a place for artists to be. Poor everyone else in the state, you know, we're supposed to be the cool, hip, metropolitan area. So we kind of took a bigger approach to it than just like the Salt Lake City, you know, community and art center. Mm-hmm. Instead, we decided to create the Utah Arts Alliance, and with that idea is that we would bring together arts groups and artists rather than having everyone just be on their own little box or whatever. It's all, for us, it's all about collaboration. There is no competition as far as we're concerned. Whether people like it or not, we're supporting them and and trying to help them. What we do mostly is collaboration and partnerships and support of other artists and other nonprofit groups. Basically, we formed in 2003. Right away, we got a big space in South Salt Lake on 2191 South, 300 West. We just moved out of there in December of last year. But during that time, we opened several other venues around Salt Lake that have come and gone. We do have the other location on Main Street, 127 South Main Street, and that's our art gallery and recording studio, Midnight Records. And we've been in there for about 5 years. Currently, we do have these two locations. Are probably the next project that we're looking on after we finish this Salt Lake City Arts Hub is creating the St. George Arts Hub. And so we're already making a lot of connections with the art groups and stuff in St. George and expanding kind of that original mission of having sort of these arts hubs or different services and venues throughout the state.
What kind of projects, can you give us an idea of what kind of projects are being sponsored or organized by the Utah Arts Alliance?
The Arts Alliance, we do a lot of different things, and that's kind of a long conversation, but the Arts Alliance has our own programs that we do, like the Urban Arts Festival that's June 9th here at the Salt Lake City Arts Hub. That's a huge festival where we have artist booths, we have three stages, including live music, hip-hop, performances, slam poetry, belly dancing, we have a DJ stage, breakdancing performances and competitions, skateboard demonstrations and competitions, a lot of different things like that. We also have Connect, which is an event we do monthly on the second Friday of each month. Artists of any medium can just show up, bring their work, and it's a really fun, casual atmosphere where people can bring their work, meet other artists, meet other people in the community. Everyone gets to vote on their favorite pieces, and then at the end of the year, the top artists of each month are invited back, and the top three artists receive $2,000 in grant funding from the Utah Arts Alliance. So, as far as I know, we're the only nonprofit that actually directly funds artists with cash grants, and sort of a peer review grant process. But we do a lot of other things. We have youth arts classes, and then we do a lot of support to other groups, and so a lot of our partner groups in here include like B-Boy Federation, Salt Lake Capoeira, Samba Fogo, People Productions, Rhythms of Life. We have a lot of other performance and arts groups that we provide subsidized space to help them continue their work and their educational projects and cultural activities. And then we have, the Arts Hub here has 35 studio spaces, and right now we're almost full. And so we have artists working in all mediums, photographers, painters, computer artists, you name it. So we provide a lot of support in that way. And then we provide a home for groups like Utah Cultural Alliance or Utah Humanities Council to have, you know, board meetings or special events or functions or whatnot. So we do a lot of different things. That's just a short list of some of the things that we do.
So you guys have recently opened up, the Utah Arts Alliance has recently opened up this SLC Arts Hub, and it's on 663 West, 100 South. It's a massive, amazing space. Can you tell us a little bit about the process of like renovating this space and like what it was before and like what were the difficulties in turning this into like a functioning art building?
It's kind of funny how this all happened. We were in the space on 3rd West that we had been in for 9 years. We pretty much had filled that place up within a month of having it in, 2004. And so it's kind of been, it was great because it was full and it was just kind of working well. But it was also, I felt kind of stagnant, like there was no room to really grow, not a lot of excitement of like the future. It was kind of always just like, yeah, we're doing awesome stuff and it's the same stuff because we don't have any room to do anything else,
right.
And so the property owner of that place, basically a big corporation came in and offered him more money for our space. And so he just kind of, out of nowhere, said, sorry, we appreciate you guys being in here for the last 9 years and being good tenants, but you have to leave because someone offered me more money. Pretty lame.
Yeah.
It was my feeling at the time. At first I was a little bit like, oh crap, what do we do now? But I just right away, I was like, well, this is a great opportunity to change, you know. To, if you're not changing in some way or another, then you might as well be dead, right? And so I was like, let's make this change a good thing, you know, instead of freaking out about it. Let's really do what we want to do. And so I ended up spending the next couple months visiting every large vacant building in the city, probably, which I love doing anyway. I love looking at spaces and imagining what they can turn into. The RDA of Salt Lake City owns this property, and they're a landlord. They've been landlords for us for at other properties and stuff, and so they suggested we come look at the building, and we did, and I really liked it. You know, it's 33,000 square feet of space, and I could visualize, you know, tearing out stuff and putting in dance studios and putting up a performance space. And some of our board members were a little bit leery about it. Like, you know, they didn't think that it was exactly what we needed, but enough of us kind of could see the vision, and everyone got behind the project. And it took about 2 or 3 months of negotiations with the city in order to figure out a mutually beneficial agreement to be able to get the space, and that was not easy, but we're very fortunate that we were able to work out an understanding and agreement with them. And from there, we just, you know, have had this great community and support, especially Salt Lake Capoeira has been one of our main partners since day one. They have a huge community behind them. Hundreds of people attend their classes and are part of their performance group and community. And they really stepped up to help redo the dance studio. You know, we have a 4,000 plus dance studio now. And so it was a lot of their volunteer work that helped us tear down walls, tear out the carpet, install this beautiful huge dance floor. And so that was done actually by, I think we whipped that out within about 2 weeks, which is a huge project. Just people working 8 to 12 hours a day. And it was really cool because no one got paid. Like, it was all just people believed in this, and this is their home, and they wanted to make it. So there's a lot of energy and excitement behind it, and it's just amazing what can happen, you know, with people just pitching in. It would have cost, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to get that project done, and it only ended up being about $10,000 because of all of the support and volunteerism behind it. The second project has been moving the Graywall Gallery over here from Pierpont Avenue. Graywall Gallery used to be where Slug Magazine has expanded their operations, which is awesome, and I was happy to see that that space is going to such great, awesome people. So as we got into the space, where I was like, there's plenty of room for a gallery. I was like, we're gonna need a gallery here anyway. I don't think we need three art galleries, you know. We already have two art galleries.
Yeah.
Let's move Graywall in here. Tamara Fox, who's the director of Graywall, was really excited about that idea. And it also saves us a lot of money not having to pay rent at three different places, just two different places to provide the same services. So with that, we've, you know, just been working on the gallery space. The gallery, you know, went from the space on Pierpont, I don't even know, probably 300 square feet, I don't know, a pretty small space.
Yeah.
And the new Graywall Gallery space is about 3,500 square feet, so it's a lot bigger, and we can do a lot more stuff.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. From there, we're working on the Cube, which is a separate building on the other side of the property. The Cube is going to be a performance space. We really want to house a lot of small production companies, dance companies, things like that. It's kind of like a black box theater, a little bigger than a black box theater type situation. And then it'll also be a space for live music. Kind of a smaller venue, probably about 70 to 80 people seated in a black box theater setting, and probably about 300 people in a concert setting for the Cube space.
The SLC Arts Hub will be the venue for the second annual Urban Arts Festival this year, which is organized by the Utah Arts Alliance. When is this event? What can we expect from this event?
Okay, so Urban Arts Festival this year is June 9th. It's a Saturday. It goes from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. And we'll be utilizing the whole property here at the SLC Arts Hub. We have, I don't know what the acreage is officially, I guess I need to look at it, but we have lots of space, let's just say that. We have more space than we did last year, even having the whole Pierpont Avenue and the Crane Building parking lot. We have indoor and outdoor venues. We have a circus tent, which is pretty unique to the city. We have a 4,000 square foot circus tent that we'll be having the performance elements of the festival in. We have the Cube that I mentioned before, which is going to have all of the live music and hip-hop acts and stuff like that. And then we'll have a DJ stage that'll be kind of an outdoor DJ stage that'll be by the graffiti walls and the skating area. We just have tons of open space where all of the artist booths and community booths and sponsor booths and all of that will be. I think we have about 8 food vendors this year. We have 3 stages and 35 to 40 acts. Just the artists involved, between the visual artists and the performers and the musicians, there's already several hundred of people involved with the festival. So so come, it'll be awesome. You can look up more information about it at urbanartsfest.org. And it is $5 to get in this year. One of the cheapest festivals in town. Mm-hmm. And it goes to support Utah Arts Alliance and all the programs we do to support the community. And so it's for a great cause too.
Do you look forward to any specific artists that are going to be at the festival?
Yeah, well, actually, some of my favorite artists are here at this Arts mm-hmm. Hub, you know. So Blake Palmer and Kat Palmer, who I love both of them very much and their work, and Chris Madsen, also one of the artists here, so I'm excited to see them. There's such a long list of artists that I don't want to play too many favorites or anything. Yeah, I'm excited to see most all of them. And I'm excited to see there's some new faces on the list. There's probably 20, 30 people that I haven't met or don't fully know, but they've got dragged into the festival. And so I'm excited to see some new work.
The Urban Arts Festival takes place this Saturday, June 9th at the SLC Arts Hub. It's located at 663 West, 100 South in downtown Salt Lake City. For more information on the festival, including music, artists, vendors, and other info, check out urbanartsfest.org. And for more info on the SLC Arts Hub and the UAA in general, visit them at utaharts.org. Thanks for listening to another edition of Soundwaves from the Underground. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Crucial Fest is coming up. Are you attending any of the shows this year? What bands are you looking forward to seeing during the 2-week rock festival? Drop us a line and tell us your thoughts on this year's event by sending an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We may just play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan, with associate producers Jeanette D. Moses, Ricky Vigil, Esther Moronio, and Jonathan Paxton. Our executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis, with our main logo and art design by T. Doan and technical design by Kate O'Connor. On next week's episode, Gnawing Suspicion, Yelp Goes Vegan, and we profile the Grow Wild Nursery.